Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing our recollections series today. We're going to talk about the inimitable Bart Scott. A storied history with this franchise. When I go back and look at some of the details and doing research for the episode, and joining me to talk about him is Kiske Baskerville. Kiske, how are you doing today?
I'm great, and good vocabulary word.
Which one?
Inimitable.
Okay, yes. There you go. All right. So talking about Bart Scott today, why don't you start by telling us why you chose Bart Scott?
So I've always taken an interest in the inside linebackers that played next to Ray, especially because a lot of them just went when they left, they fizzled out. Ed Hartwell being a really good example of that. And then Bart Scott came literally a year later. Well, they were on the team at the same time, but he got playing time like a year after Ed Hartwell left. So Bart draws a lot of attention to himself. So I thought he would be a good person to review.
I was reminded of all sorts of stuff about his playing career that I'd kind of forgotten. That we'll go into here, but I want to talk about just how the Ravens scouted him originally. He was not a highly touted prospect in any way out of Southern Illinois, the Salukis in 2002. Reportedly, he had no real pro day, but the Ravens went to measure him, and they saw a guy who had bulked up to 242 pounds. He played at about 225, ran a 4.62 40 on grass, which is really impressive. If you don't know, you can be on a spongy track and it can actually hurt your time. It's almost like running in sand. You can be on a normal track, and that's usually the fastest. You can do like an asphalt or a clay track or whatever. Other people would know more about this. And also was reportedly in the 3.9s on the shuttle. The Ravens were super impressed, but did not want to spend a draft pick on him nonetheless. And I've forgotten who their 2002 seventh round draft pick was, but I'm sure it's nobody really impressive. So they were not within the building. The report is, the story is, the scouts were not permitted to say his name prior to the draft. They didn't want anything leaking out to somebody who might tell somebody or a friend or blab about it and have Bart Scott's name be out there for other teams to be interested in. And it's interesting because Bart Scott mentions interest from five franchises that are definitely with it franchises: Pittsburgh, Miami, New England, Kansas City, and Baltimore, in a 2002 interview I found. But the Ravens are the team that obviously turned his head.
Okay. Well, I did not know that about him. It's great acquisition strategy. We should continue to practice those strategies to this day.
Active for all 16 games as a rookie, but basically for 3 years, didn't really play very much on defense. And you mentioned this, Ed Hartwell playing next to Ray during a lot of those years.
But also because he was undrafted. The Ravens, it's not even just a John Harbaugh thing. Like, obviously, this was during Billick's era. They just play special teams. So his first three seasons, he played all 16 games his first two seasons, but he was on special teams. His third season, he did not play in all 16 games. He played 13 games, but he was still special teams.
Yeah, he only missed four games in an 11-year career, which is still, to me, outrageously good. He missed one game later on, I think, with the Jets, not even with
his last season with the Jets.
Yeah. But he unbelievably great special teams players. I mean, probably one of the greatest special teams players in Ravens history. And it kind of looked like in 2000 and going into 2005 anyway, that he was never really going to find his niche as a linebacker and might be a longtime survivor a la McClellan and other people came after him, obviously. The Levine and then Malik Harrison now appears to be on that track. Other players who have a very limited defensive role, but have a much larger role on special teams.
Little off track with Malik Harrison. I think Malik Harrison just got in John Harbaugh's doghouse when he got shot. And that's really what led to him not getting as much playing time.
Well, he's out now. I mean, he has a very key role with the Ravens in terms of being a base defense outside linebacker. And I'm not saying that thing didn't or maybe even shouldn't get into it. And Malik Harrison is the one who got shot. I'm trying to think about it.
Yeah, he caught a stray bullet. He was out of town. I think it was like a bye week or something. And he caught a stray bullet. And they said Harbaugh basically read him the riot act for even being in a position to catch a stray bullet. But they weren't shooting at him. He was just in an area where a shootout happened and he got astray.
Players need to be extra careful. And I don't know if this was a club or whatever, but the Kari Vedvik incident that happened many years later, obviously, and put him on NFI for the whole year was one where the player really should have known better. He's in a bad section of Baltimore, whether he knew it or not. And he was a Swedish or Norwegian guy, Scandinavian guy, whatever the case may be. He may not have known, what a bad area of Baltimore was, but he was somewhere in the a little bit north of North Avenue and south of Johns Hopkins and whatnot, an area that wasn't all that great. And apparently some women might have led him into a bad position there.
I've been in some sketchy. I've been in some sketchy situations in that area. I know it well. I wasn't up to anything nefarious. I was actually just there for like a rap battle, but there was sketchy things going on around us.
All right. Well, fair enough. And I don't want to cast aspersions on Baltimore. This is a city I grew up in, and it's only about 15 blocks north of there that I live, but lived. But it's an area that a ball player has got to, just has to be thinking about whether he wants to be there or not at night. And anyway, it is what it is.
There's certain areas down here that all it took was one or two times being in the area that I was like, oh yeah, I should never frequent this area.
Let's talk a little bit more. 2005 was kind of the 2004 and 2005 seasons. We got a kind of a sense of who Bart Scott was as a football player. The 2004 is in the game of the week thing with the Jets, and they had all these people mic'd up. Have you seen Akiske, I assume, over the years at some point?
No, I thought he was still on special teams mostly in 2004.
Okay, he definitely played a little bit of a few defensive snaps all of those years. Okay, but in the 2004 game against the Jets, they had significant injuries in the secondary such that they were out of cornerbacks, which almost never happens in an NFL game.
This is why he's listed as a safety and an inside linebacker.
Well, in that game, he got a call from Mike Nolan, and you actually hear him get on the phone with Mike Nolan, and he says, give me Bart Scott. And he goes, we're putting you on 83 in the slot on the next series because they were out of corners. And 83 was Wayne Krabet, who was eating the Ravens alive and had, several times, but he wasn't, a particularly fast wide receiver. So a good matchup.
I do remember Wayne Krabet. He was a really good slot. Yeah.
I thought that was very cool. And then in 05, the Ravens had massive injuries in the secondary, and Rex Ryan responded via the talents of Thomas and Scott with 265 snaps that year of only three defensive backs. And just to think about ever having three defensive backs in the National Football League on the field in today's game,
today you get eaten alive, but it was a different era.
Yeah, it's not that it's 20 years ago. It doesn't seem like it. And there was still plenty of passing in the league. It was still thought to be a passing league at that time, but it was something where Adelis Thomas and Scott to a with his coverage skills and inside linebacker really allowed them to do. I thought that really underscored just how important and valuable Scott could be to this defense in his fourth season.
When I was refreshing myself before we, you know, did this episode, you know, I go to several sites, but one of them had Bart Scott listed as inside linebacker / safety. And I was like, I don't remember him being that safety. So I was going back and I'm like, when was he a safety?
Yeah. They definitely had to use him I think of him as always being a weak side linebacker, but he definitely had significant coverage responsibilities within that role. The guy who lined up more like a strong safety a lot was Adalis Thomas. And you know, we think of Adalis Thomas maybe from the 2006 season being a guy who lines up hand in the dirt on third down, but on other downs, he can line up just directly opposite slot receiver or a tight end who's flexed wide, and he can be in press coverage. He can be in off coverage. You don't know what he's going to do.
So there's like three things I remember about Adalis Thomas more than anything else. First, I think he was converted from a defensive tackle.
Yeah, that's right. When he's first drafted,
him and Jarrett Johnson, they were both converted from defensive tackles. And the other thing was that he is the one that injured Michael Vick, and then they made the horse collar tackle rule like right after that because he broke Vick. And you know, other people had been broken too, but I think it was when Michael Vick specifically got broken that they were like, no, you can't do that anymore. So I think it was the next season they were like, this is illegal. You can't do that anymore. And the perfect season Patriots that lost in the Super Bowl, Adalis Thomas had his hair on fire that whole game. He was the best defensive player on the field. He probably would have been an MVP if they had won it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did have one great year with New England after he left Baltimore, but that 2006 season, he never had another year quite at that level. Big sack total. Honestly, they could just play him anywhere they wanted. But we're talking about Bart Scott, so let's bring it back for a moment. So after the 2005 season, Bart Scott signed a $13.5 million extension for three more years with the Ravens through 2006 to 2008. And
yeah,
do you want to talk about it?
They wanted to bring him back after that too, but the Jets just he said he would follow Rex Ryan anywhere. But they both had contracts out for him, and then the Jets adjusted their contract so they could snare him. And he went to the Jets for on a six-year deal for $48
million. Yep. That's exactly correct. But I'm stick with the 2005 for a second. We'll get there to the second contract in a minute. $13.5 million for 3 years. But the funny thing about it, he was in the Browns facility, had reportedly negotiated a deal with them, called up the Ravens and said, hey, can you guys match this offer or do better? And Ozzie offered him $13.5 million for 3 years. And he took it, agreeing to the contract from inside the Browns facility, which is one of the really great stick it to the Browns moments, because Bart Scott from 2006 to 2008 was one hell of a football player.
He was really good during that stretch. Actually, he was still good, I would say, up to his first 2 years with the Jets. Mm-hmm. So, he was really good during that stint. And in 2005 in particular, Ray had a hamstring injury, and Bart really got playing time at that point.
Yep, he did indeed. 2006, he won the AFC Defensive Player of the Month in the first month of the season, had an enormous game against the Chargers that a lot of people remember. He had 15 tackles and he had an interception in a game that the Ravens ended up winning on the Todd Heap touchdown to beat, who was the guy, the ex-Maryland guy. I want to say Merriweather, but I didn't think that was his name exactly. Sean, maybe it is Sean Merriweather.
Sean Merriman?
Merriman, that's it. Okay. So, that 2006 season, he played in his only Pro Bowl. He had 9.5 sacks, which was 38% of his career total.
He was an alternate for Ray Lewis in that Pro Bowl.
Seems kind of sad that would have to be the way of it. And always playing in somebody else's shadow.
And that was not in 2005, but in 2006, you know, the real big years. The only year where he had like really good sack totals. He ended up with 9.5 sacks that year. The closest he got to that after that was 4.5 sacks in his penultimate season with the Jets.
played 11 years in the league. He had 25 sacks. Those 9.5 represented 38% of his career total. So he really did. He's a great weapon. And he had the right defensive coordinator. You can understand why he loved Rex Ryan so much, is that Rex wanted to use him as a blitzer, as an odd piece, as a roving guy along the line of scrimmage. He'd been very good as a coverage player, and he still was in 2006, but he was even better as a pass rusher that year, where he was all over the quarterback. He had a large number of quarterback hits that year. I want to say he was up maybe 20, might have only been 12, but a lot of quarterback hits that year. So
I know we're still talking about 2006, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of passes defended that year, too. He had nine passes defended that year. It was a great season. It was his best season, I think, by far. I don't think it's actually particularly close in the other season. But the next season was also, I think he was good, like you said, that whole stretch. And I would also include the first 2 years with the Jets. He racked up a lot of tackles. Mm-hmm. I think all of the elite inside linebackers at the time just racked up a lot of tackles. I don't think in today's era most middle linebackers rack up anywhere like over 140 tackles. I think he had 135 in 2006 total, counting assists.
I mean, that's a terrific total. There was more running in that era. He was a good tackler, and so he converted a high percentage of his total, but he also wasn't Ray Lewis in terms of his number of tackles, but a hell of a player.
I remember the thing I remember more about Bart Scott as a Raven, more than anything else, is when he said he had to put a little extra hot sauce on it.
Yep.
And the media was so angry, and I was like, I don't see why are you mad though? Like, okay, he took the guy down, put a little extra hot sauce on. I don't see the big deal here. And when I was, refreshing myself and looking this up, people thought he really put hot sauce on him. Like he had hot sauce in his pocket or something. I'm like, you would have to be insane to think that he had hot sauce in his pocket to throw in this guy's ankles.
Okay. I'll give you the other side of this point of view. And Bart shouldn't have said it, first of all, because what he was really talking about was putting an extra twist or really, I think what we might call a hip drop tackle today on Reggie Bush of the Saints. So Reggie Bush had been the number one overall draft pick. He was with the Saints in 2006. Bart claimed he took a cheap shot at him early in the game. So he decided he was going to put a little extra hot sauce on that ankle. And what it meant was that he rolled over him in a way that we would have been, were very upset about when Wilson did it to Andrews last year. Yes. And injured him. Well, anyway, Reggie Bush was lying prostrate on the field for several minutes and was eventually left the field. The Ravens won the game big. Scott just shouldn't have said anything about it after the fact. But then he talked about, the hot sauce play and whatnot. Perfectly legal tackle, probably should not be in the NFL. The hip drop tackle is something that's you're about 25 times as likely to be injured, is one of the statistics I've heard quoted. It really is something the NFL, in the name of player safety, really needs to find a way to get rid of. And they've taken a step in that direction this year. We'll see how effective it is.
Yeah, they made a weird rule about it.
Yeah. Well, and we're now also 18 years after the hot sauce incident, this has happened. I mean, it's kind of like the NFL, talk about slow to act,
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I remember it being like they were really, really mad at him for a long time about that. And I was just like, okay, he took the guy down. I didn't at the time, I wasn't really aware of hip drops being particularly more dangerous than any other tackle. And for the most part, I only see smaller guys do it. Like Bart Scott's probably like the biggest guy that I've probably seen do a hip drop tackle. It's usually like DBs. When they had the whole argument this off season, I didn't like the bigger tacklers, the guys that are front seven are like, oh yeah, you don't have to do that. You could just hit them square. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't have to do it anyway. You're just a larger man. It's the smaller guys that have to do this to take the guys down.
Yeah. It's definitely linebackers are, I think the, maybe the biggest problem with it, because they say we have to tackle a player and not push him forward. And the way I can tackle him and not push him forward is to roll over his legs and get him down that way. And I don't like ways that injuries are promoted in the NFL. I really hate the game, the fact that the game comes down to injuries to such a degree. I mean, look, the truth of the matter is, and let's all be honest here, we hear about injuries happening to other teams, and we're generally speaking not unhappy about it at the nicest we can possibly be, because injuries are a part of the game, and we all have to, you know, every team has to go through that. Every team's fans have to go through that. And yet your season can be ruined by an injury. And we only have to look at the 2021 and 22 seasons and what happened to Lamar Jackson to know that that's true.
Yeah. It is a full contact sport. There are things we can do to make it safer. I think some of the things that have been done to make it safer and, you know, I'd love to.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Talk to you about it on a different episode further. I think some of them are egregious. Like, if there's one rule I can't stand, it is to allow them to make a football move after the catch. I'm like, oh, not only do I have to let you catch the ball, I have to let you try to advance it before I can hit you. That's insane to me.
I'm not a fan of the roughing the passer rules as employed either. It's something that I just do not believe that has not benefited the Ravens. The Ravens have been a team that's been frequently penalized for roughing the passer. They've had a hard time getting right because they're a team that generates a lot of pressure. So anyway,
I can think of a couple of times where somebody just landed close to Tom's feet and he would complain and get a call. And I'm like, he didn't even touch him. He wasn't even close to touching him. He's just somewhere near your feet. And you wave your arms and they throw a flag. And I'm like, that's not a foul.
It is extremely frustrating to see a flag asked for and given. Extremely frustrating. And there almost ought to be something as you won't get the flag if you ask for it and it hasn't already been thrown kind of thing. That would be something, but that would be a very difficult behavior to train out of wide receivers and quarterbacks to try and beg for interference calls and roughing the passer calls, you know, so regularly.
But I mean, if they're going to get the flag, then they're going to complain for the flag. So, you know, I can see why they do it. I just don't like it when they do.
mm-hmm. Let's get back to Bart Scott here. 2007, terrible year for the Ravens, obviously. You know, injuries in the defensive backfield again killed the season, as happened on several occasions to this team. When you look at 2015, 2007, 2005. But they had a bunch of injuries in the defensive backfield again, did not play well for the season. But the one kind of shining moment was the, I think, a Sunday night game or a Monday night game. I can't remember if it was which night it was on. I think it was Monday, because I think it was Madden, where they played the Patriots, and the Patriots came in undefeated. And the Ravens basically fought very hard for the game, a high wind game, which really reduced the effectiveness of Tom Brady. But they were in a position to win it. They Patriots were driving for the winning score. They got the Ravens got him to fourth down. Rex Ryan from the sideline called timeout when he probably shouldn't have, and he should just let the play happen. The Ravens defenders on the field are very upset about that. And then Jermaine Winborn got flagged for either a defensive hold or pass interference. I forget which one it was that set the Patriots up for the winning score in the final seconds. When that flag was thrown, and I believe it's that flag and not another one, Bart Scott picked up the flag and threw it into the stands.
Yes. Yes. He got two big penalties in that game. And the second penalty is for throwing the flag on the first penalty.
All right. So 2008, the Ravens really overachieved in that first Harbaugh Flacco year. They were ahead of schedule in terms of where they were. Not only did they make the playoffs, they won the game at Miami very convincingly in Flacco's first playoff game. Then they went to Tennessee, played the number one seed, beat them in an absolute classic. Bart Scott was involved in the fumble that Crumpler had near the goal line. I forget if he was the one who forced it. He might have been. And then I think Fabian Washington recovered it at like the 1 yard line.
Fabian Washington, that's another good good player.
And then the team that overachieved, certainly they ended up losing to the Steelers, but another great season from Scott. And Scott and Ray Lewis were both free agents at the end of that year, which were coming up to kind of a key moment. The Ravens really had to re-sign at least one of them. And Ray had made some unfortunate comments during the season, saying that it was really Rex Ryan and not John Harbaugh that was the head coach of the 2008 Ravens.
I mean, there were a couple of times where Ray stuck his foot in his mouth and then walked it back.
he was kind of forced to do so. It worked out very well for the Ravens. You made the comment about Rex Ryan basically coming to his house 5 minutes after free agency began and saying, "Hey Bart, we're going to New York. Come on with me. We'll show you the facilities," kind of thing. And you know, I don't know if he was expecting him to show up or whatnot, but he you know, got in the car with him and he went up to New York, and they never let him leave there without signing. He signed for 6 years, $48 million, and I don't think Ray Lewis ever really forgave him for that, because Ray wanted the contract with the Jets. He wanted to follow Rex Ryan too, but the Jets only had one contract to give out, and the Ravens only had one contract to give out, so Ray actually signed a lesser contract with the Ravens, 7 years for $44.5 million. And nothing wrong with that contract, mind you, but Ray thought he was worth more probably, and certainly thought he was worth more than Bart Scott. And he ended up being a much better player still than Bart Scott for the remaining years of his deal, the 2009-11.
Was that the same offseason where Ray really thought he was going to be with the Cowboys and they just did not offer him a contract? Was that offseason?
Might have been. He was testing free agency for his only time as a Raven at that point. Every other time they'd signed him early.
I think that's when he wanted, he was trying to get Jerry Jones to come get him. And I think by that time he just thought he was long in the tooth and just didn't really want him on his team. But Ray really thought that he could join the Cowboys, and then the Cowboys just didn't make him an offer.
Incredible. Larry Lewis already played 13 seasons, so he was long in the tooth, and yet he still had three great seasons left. And then that kind of very poor 2012 season where he got hurt and playing with one arm and whatnot in the playoffs was he didn't play well, but he was a hell of a player from 9 to 11. I mean, just still a very, very great player. And there's people, you know, other teams, when we go to their stadiums, they say, is Ray Lewis really all that? Is he really that good anymore? And he's still playing at a very, very high level. He had every reason to come back.
He's another player that the NFL changed the rules after a big hit. Who was it that he picked somebody up and drove him into the ground and they got hurt. And then the next season, they're like, you can't do that anymore.
They do have, anytime you get a rule named after you, like the Deion Sanders rule or the, or, you know, all of those things, they're generally good if you're not on the receiving end of the injury. So if I don't know if the horse collar tackle is probably known as the Michael Vick rule. I'm not 100% sure of that, but it's generally speaking a good thing if you're very effective. Like the Mel Blount rules for contact in the secondary are generally, because bump and run had become so effective by the cornerbacks of the 70s that they just had to fix the passing game.
I wonder if I know you can't reach across the line and slap the defender in the helmet, but you know, according to Michael Irvin, he used to slap them so hard they would have to look out the ear hole, and then he'd just run away and, you know, catch the pass, get a touchdown, you know, first down, whatever. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that should have been illegal. He's like, no, I used to just reach across the line, slap their helmet and run away. And I'm like, all right, well.
Kiske, we'll have to do this. We'll do an episode of rules named after players. I think that would be a fun one to sit down and do.
Sounds like a party.
How about big moments for Scott when he was with the Ravens? Big individual plays, because I've got about three here that I think are cool.
I usually don't remember individual plays. I remember a hot sauce one because of the uproar about it. I don't remember individual games, but I do remember a couple of big hits on Roethlisberger because it was so hard to take him down. So so I remember some of those big hits on Roethlisberger, but I couldn't tell you like the game or the year. I just remembered that he got him down.
Yeah. All right. So the he had two really memorable plays in the 27-0 shutout of the Steelers in 2006. And the first was taking Ben Roethlisberger airborne on a sack. He came in untouched, hit him midsection, lifted Roethlisberger off his feet, went off his feet himself, and then landed on top of him. And Roethlisberger stayed down for a while. He did come back into the game, but was sacked 9 times in total in that game. He might have been concussed on the play. I'm not sure. But anyway, he didn't play all that well. Needless to say, the rest of the game.
Roethlisberger
either
was a tough quarterback. I think Haloti Ngata broke his nose one game and he finished the game.
Stayed in there, yeah. And he got concussed in the playoff game the Ravens finally won against the Steelers in 2014, and he just ran back out on the field despite them telling him he couldn't. And you know, Gino Kradkowski, you're out of there, and then that was that. But going back to that 27-0 win, Bart Scott also had an interception on, I think, 4th-and-17 or 4th-and-22 that sealed the shutout. And that was a very sweet interception. Didn't want the Steelers getting another first down at that point and potentially scoring. And Bart Scott intercepted the pass, and it was in the final minute and a half or so the Ravens were able to kneel out the clock and complete the shutout of the Steelers. But that's probably the Bart Scott game from his Ravens career. I'm guessing a lot of you folks out there listening probably remember the hit on Roethlisberger as kind of the highlight of his career.
Yeah, that was still during 2006 then, because he only had 4 interceptions throughout his career, one of them actually during his rookie season, and then he had 2 in 2006, and then he had 1 his very last season with the Jets.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for a guy who got his hands on the football as often as he did, particularly in 2006, it's kind of not a high interception total. You'd figure he'd get a couple more.
So I always had a thing about like interceptions. I think they're great, and I think we should get as many as we can. But at the same time, I think it depends on the coach, because I think a lot of defenders are just taught to train their players to knock it down. Don't give the offense an opportunity to catch a deflection. Just knock it down. So I don't know. Maybe he was just taught to knock it down.
Could be. So there's a lot of linebackers get some opportunities for some cheap ones that are tipped by defensive linemen. So anyway, it's not a big deal or anything. It's just kind of a little bit sad he didn't have more opportunity. He was a good coverage player too. So good player. And then that the other game I really remember is Scott being all over the field against Phillip Rivers in the 2006 win against the Chargers, which we talked about earlier. He had an interception in that game that was fairly early. It was in the first half, and he had 15 tackles in the game.
He had a sensational season. That was, like I said, by far his best individual season.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on Bart Scott before we call it here?
So he works for ESPN now, I believe, one of their radio stations. He's and he's got a podcast for that radio station with, I can't remember the guy's name. It's like Hawk or something. Alan Hawk or something like that, who used to be a broadcaster for one of the other New York teams, and they have a show together now. And he went immediately into networking, the network industry, like as soon as he retired. So his last season with the Jets was in 2012. He didn't actually retire until 2013. He did like preseason with a couple of teams. I think the Raiders might have been one. I don't remember exactly. No, I know he had one with the Bengals, but I think he might also went to the Raiders. But he didn't make it through preseason either time. And then he went immediately to work for CBS. So he was doing games with CBS. And then in 2017, he went somewhere else. And now he's with ESPN. And he also got into trouble more recently. I don't remember the exact year, but he got into trouble more recently commenting on a Ravens game, actually, playing the Bengals, where he said, "Oh yeah, they need to hurt Joe Burrow." And they were like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, and he just named various ways to hit him and hurt him so that he wouldn't play as well. And I'm like, yeah, he's definitely old school, but you can't say that.
Yeah, it's just it is. I tell you what, it just sucks about being an NFL fan today is that you have to root for injuries. More than rooting for injuries, what I really hate is the fact that so much of the game and so much of the season comes down to injuries, and that injuries, you already have a league that's full of roller coaster parity. So you have a good, the systems are in place for revenue sharing and for keeping contracts in line such that every team, if they can get the right management in place, has a good chance to win.
But I also think that's part of what makes the Ravens so good, because we have such good depth at just about every position. I think the reason why we had such a dramatic fall off when Lamar missed significant playing time is because I never thought Snoop was a good backup in the first place. I understand that he was cheap and we had him on a rookie deal, and then we had him on the one year, what was that, tender? Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. He has a horrible win-loss record. It's an absolutely dreadful win-loss record. I don't care that he's good in the preseason. He doesn't win games. We need somebody that can actually win when Jackson's not on the field.
They've definitely taken a specific strategic slant with this and said, if Jackson is lost, everything about our offensive identity is gone, and we're done as a Super Bowl contender. So we're not going to try and spend additional money on a backup quarterback. Other teams, which have a more questionable first quarterback situation, are more likely to spend on a backup who's a mid-level backup. So the Cleveland Browns they have a good defense, and they've done a very good job of basically having a set of backup quarterbacks around who can help them. In particular, Joe Flacco last year.
And then they purposefully let him go because they didn't want dissension in the locker room.
Well, if you've got instability at the position, I mean, look at Elvis Gerback and Randall Cunningham were signed for the same 2001 Ravens teams. Try and hope that one of them could get the job done and take the Ravens to the Super Bowl again.
I think we should have just stuck with Dilfer.
Well, given the hindsight, of course, that would have been the better move, and they would have been in a better cap position.
even at the time, I thought we should have just stuck with Dilfer. Okay, Gerback is the shiny new toy. I get it. He's got a big arm. I get it. Don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You already have something that works. Use that.
You know, all I can say is the way people were screaming for Dilfer to be replaced even after the Super Bowl win is exactly the kind of entitled horseshit that people use to say that John Harbaugh is not a good coach. It basically, you want a really not good coach? Look at the Arizona Cardinals and the set of losers they've had in there, or the Cleveland Browns and you know, a series of unsuccessful head coaches. You don't know what bad head coaching is. Harbaugh has built a good organization, and yes, they passed up McDonald to keep Harbaugh, and it's possible that will not turn out to be a good move. But Harbaugh has consistently rebuilt the staff and created a set of coaches that leave, as they should when you have good coaches, to get better jobs. And I the entitlement that goes with that, and you know, the notion that the team had to get rid of Dilfer, the fans would have been in uproar if that 2000 defense had been turned over to Dilfer again in 2001, and they'd have had to win it again based on what he'd done.
I'd rather the fans be upset and we have a third Super Bowl than the fans be happy and we not. But
yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, Kiske, always a pleasure talking football with you. Appreciate you coming on the show again, and you've been on several times recently. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
So the best place is to just email me at face_off@me.com. A lot of people are like, at me? I'm like, yes, that's the original iCloud. They didn't change it to iCloud until afterwards. It was ME. It was just me. So face_off@me.com.
All right. Very cool. Appreciate you having you on, Kiske. Other people out there, if you'd like to come on and talk football, whether it's a recollection series, I'm doing a concern series still, probably still can get in on that. DM me. They're always open on Twitter. I'll respond to you very quickly. Never takes long to set up an episode like this. And the amount of research I'm looking for in most of these is not too much. It's just enough to have a reasonable back and forth conversation, whatever the topic might be. And I always appreciate the effort people have put into these. It is how I usually meet new people to do other shows with. And be on the regular set of rotating guests. And Kiske is now in the group now. Appreciate that. But anyway, looking to meet you if you're interested in analysis of Ravens football. Kiske, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.